the brand new Professor and Barney podcast. It's really popular.
Big response in New Zealand from the first one, I assume?
Huge response. It was actually a record listening... It was a record for listening.
Wow. Each week, a new episode, and every episode, a new topic inspired by a current sporting affair. The latest, cheating, thanks to the Houston Astros.
I guess today's all about cheating.
We're going to look at the best and worst cheaters that have ever sort of graced the sporting landscape.
Great, and we're going the quirky and the weird. So if you've tuned in to hear about Lance Armstrong or Marion Jones, it's not going to happen. We've dug deep. It's going to be some weird shit.
Lawsuits not required.
Yeah. I wanted to talk for a second about the psychology of cheating.
Barney, I think it's important.
Wait, you and I have just been on a two-day trip away together. My missus doesn't need you talking through the psychology of cheating first. Thanks.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Barney, what were you doing when I walked in that room? My God.
This is more of an intervention podcast.
Please search for the Professor and Barney podcast and hit subscribe wherever you do your listening.
Yeah, hello and welcome to the Fox Football Podcast. We have got a massive show lined up for you today with a massive guest, and we are thoroughly looking forward to getting into all of that, as well as looking at the weekend in the A-League and the Oyaroos, who are flying high. Plenty to sink our teeth into, Simon Hill. It should be a big show.
Good to see you, Garvey. I see you got your Liverpool top on.
I'm a little bit tired. Yeah. It's been two nights of no sleep. The Oyaroos on Saturday night and then at Liverpool at 3:30 a.m. this morning. But yes, another big win. So we'll talk about that later on.
Absolutely. I just hope you win it in really boring fashion. A 0-0 draw away to Burnley when we drop points or something.
After
horrible anti-climax.
After 30 years, I couldn't care how we do it. We can do it in our sleep, and I think we'll all be happy after the years of pain.
Were you alive the last time that Liverpool
yes,
won?
Yes, I was. Just 1990. About. So I think I'd been following them for, I was only six or seven.
Right.
So
short pants.
Just started following them, and then we went through years of pain over here in Australia, Liverpool fans. Dear. You know, yeah.
Terrible. Those two European Cups must have been really difficult to deal with.
The 90s were tough. We had to stick through the tough times. Now we're having the good times. You know all about that.
Yes. Yes.
Speaking of tough times, our guest is going through them right now in football, but he has been good enough to join us today, which I'm, to be honest, give him massive credit for, because Mitch Duke, I spoke to you a few weeks ago about coming onto the Fox Football Podcast, and I tell you what, considering the fact that your manager was removed today, many other players would have said, sorry, I'm out, thank you very much.
I think the club would have said, sorry, he's out. Probably. Thanks very much. So mate, credit to the Wanderers.
Massive
as well.
Credit to you for fronting up. Thanks so much for joining us on the Fox Football Podcast.
Yeah, thanks, boys, for having me on. Yeah, it's been a big day for Wanderers, and lots changed since that last time you invited me on. So a couple of weeks in football can be a long time. And, unfortunately, Babel's left us now, and credit to him. He gave it his best, and didn't give up really, and gave all his passion and love to the game and to us boys. And unfortunately, we couldn't get the results to follow suit.
What happens to the tattoo on the arm?
If it's anything to go by, he's obviously just that passionate and love for football. He's tattooed his skin with everywhere he's been in football. So. Right. It's just a good little memento. Unfortunately, hopefully he can still look down and be proud about it. Unfortunately, it wasn't the best time for him at the Wanderers. Not the most wins in all these games with his stats and stuff. But I think all the boys had utmost respect for him, to be fair.
Can you talk us through how the players were told? There were reports of an emergency meeting this morning. How did it all sort of go down from a player's point of view?
Yeah, literally... just all got pulled in this morning. We didn't know anything about it. And then we kind of started to picture it because the coaching staff were in their kit, but Babel wasn't. So we started to put two and two together. And then when our CEO, JT, and Babel were coming in for a meeting, we could kind of picture what was going to happen. And they just had a chat about it, and him just pretty much saying his goodbyes. Unfortunate about what's happened. It was a nice meeting, and that's the sad thing about it. He's a genuinely good guy. and he was very sad to leave. You could see that. And he wishes he had done better and us boys had done better. But again, he still said in his meeting that he has belief in us, that we can still go on to do something this season. You know, he could easily be quite sour in the situation, but he actually put his belief into us still and said, you know, we can go on and to do something and get into that finals. And he said, if you get into the finals, anything can happen, as we all know in the A-League. So he's still backing us, which is a massive respect for him.
This is a question that would probably take about an hour to answer, but given that, you know, he seemed to be well-liked by a lot of people, what went wrong?
Yeah, I think that's the hardest thing. And all the boys completely loved him. You know, like I said, he was generally a good guy. You know, you get coaches that can be very hard to deal with, and he wasn't one of those. So it was unfortunate with the results. And I think, I don't know, we just couldn't put it out, like what he had in his head. I don't think we could just put it out on the pitch completely the way he wanted to and the way we wanted to, really. Just lacked that cutting edge and don't know, like, just couldn't get the best out of us, I don't think. Because if you look at the team on paper, I think we have up there some of the best teams. But, yeah, we're just not getting the results and not putting it out there on the pitch.
That's why the fans are obviously so frustrated, because they could see signs. And you started the season pretty well. Going into a game like yesterday where, I mean, I think everyone pretty much knew if the result didn't go well, this situation was very likely. What's that like for a playing group? Do you speak about that? Are you aware of that? Is it a tangible thing that you discuss? How do you approach it?
No, not really. I think Babel dealt with it really well, with keeping that completely away from the playing group. And he actually just said, you know what, it was a couple of weeks ago actually leading up to the Adelaide game. And he's like, I could be one of two people. I could either throw in the towel and give up and say, like, I've done my best, or I can keep fighting. And he said it wasn't in his nature to give up and he wanted to keep fighting. And he wanted us to also look in the mirror and do the same thing. And, you know, really be like honest with ourselves, looking in the mirror, saying, obviously it's not good enough what we're doing. We can do better. We've got to fight harder and try and get those results. And it actually worked, because we won against Adelaide. As crazy as that game was, we still won it. But again, yeah, it's just the results slipped again after that game. And he's probably realised that maybe he can't just get the results out of the boys, and it's time to move on. So massive respect for him.
Mitch, was he an unlucky coach in some ways? I mean, you've had a lot of VAR decisions go against you this year. You've also had injuries, particularly to Radoslav Majewski, who, you know, in preseason looked very, very good. He was going to be your number 10, that creative player. Keanu Backers, of course, is away with the Oli Roos at the moment. Jordan O'Doherty has, you know, not been cited all season because he's been on the injury list as well. Did all that contribute to what's happened over the last few weeks and months?
Yeah, definitely. And that's probably one of the biggest things that's hard to get in the A-League, is the right amount of depth in a squad, you know. And unfortunately, with some of the big injuries that we received, like obviously a main player with Majewski, and, you know, even Pearman was a question mark for this game. He almost like broke his toe during the week. Keanu Backus away. You know, these are mainstay players in a starting 11 team. You know, and, you know, you putting players also probably out of position with Patrick Ziegler in the midfield and things like that. So he's definitely, and with all the VAR stuff, the Wanderers kind of get the sense now once it goes there, we don't even think that we're going to get the call. So we kind of just give up with that. So, yeah, and to be fair, I was actually having that chat with a few of the boys this morning. He's definitely been very unlucky, because some of the calls that we kind of been on the wrong end of each decision, in the sense of, like, you know, either way it could go. Say Newcastle Jets, I thought Kwame Agbor was a straight out pen. Clearly took his legs out, didn't touch the ball. It was waved away. And then we kind of do the same thing, but we're punished for it, you know. And that's kind of been the story of VAR for us, I guess, this year. And it's been very unfortunate for him and the team.
There was one I saw this week, and I actually made reference to it during the game. I know we'll talk about the Melbourne City-Newcastle match a bit later on, but the penalty that was awarded against Nikolai Topol-Stanley, I thought in many ways, although not exactly the same situation, I think it was you actually fired the shot, and it glanced off the arm of Tom Aldred when you played Brisbane.
Oh, it was Mo Adam, yeah.
It was Mo Adam.
Yeah,
apologies.
Yeah, Sam was right.
And they were very similar. You know, very close and it comes off the arm. One is a penalty and one is not. And that just seems to be the way that it's gone for you this season, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's been the hardest thing to comprehend and get our heads around, because we seem to be getting the wrong end of it each time. We can understand that you can make a mistake here and there, but, you know, that's what VAR is supposed to eradicate, which is these mistakes. And, you know, and when they make a wrong decision, we seem to be getting the wrong end of it. Like, I genuinely think the one against Aldred is a tough call to make. And I'd probably say it's not a handball, but then if you think back to the history of, we did the same thing against Wellington Phoenix with Pearman copping a handball. The ball was actually going skied over, where this shot was actually even going towards target. But we received a penalty against us and we don't get a pen for this same kind of scenario. So that's the more frustrating thing. And you could definitely understand Babel's frustration out in the press half the time as well.
Was the Keanu Backus, Keanu Backus, he's away with the Ollie Roos. Was the Kwame Yeboah goal correctly ruled out? You must have spoken to Kwame afterwards.
Yeah, he keeps sticking to his story that it's definitely definitely wasn't a handball. For me, it was hard to see. I haven't watched over it closely on a replay. All I could see was on the TV in the stadium. But it's hard. It's a hard call to make for me. But he says purely it wasn't a handball. It hit his shoulder. I think maybe what caused the question mark was the fact that his arm was out of his body, which is probably what finalised their call. But yeah, he's sticking to the story. It wasn't a handball. So I don't know if that's just him being a bit too proud. But yeah, whether or not it's... We knew once it went to VAR, we weren't going to get the call.
There's no doubt you've had some rough luck all season long, as you've pointed out, but the results just haven't gone your way. As a playing group, can you talk us through the feeling amongst the group now when the coach goes? Is there a feeling of guilt that goes on, of responsibility? How do you sort of deal with it in your own minds?
Yeah, definitely. It is a sad day because, you know, these are also people's livelihoods. You know, this is his job and he's got to, you know, take that on the chin now. He's got a family to support and things like that. So it's, you know, it's a ruthless, this is the ruthless side of football, unfortunately. And we obviously played the massive part because we're out there on the pitch trying to get the results and we're not doing the job that he wanted us to do. You know, so that's on us. And we've got to try and, you know, turn that around now and make it be the right decision, I guess, in that way, to turn this season around now that he's gone. He still had that belief in us and we want to also maybe show respect to him because this is the team he chose. Mm. So if we can turn it around, he can still look back and be like, you know what, I've still played a part in their success if we can turn it around now.
Well said. Sorry, mate. What do you do as captain? Do you say to yourself, all right, I've got to take this upon myself now, as skipper of this club, get the players together. What do you do in the coming days?
Yeah, definitely. It's funny, like this is my first time being a captain and the leader of a professional team. And it's hard being a part of a team that's obviously not winning and things are going wrong, I guess, in a way. So for me, it's been a learning experience. I know a few weeks ago, I definitely got caught up in it in my head. I was getting frustrated, trying to think like, oh, what can I do more? Am I not doing enough off the pitch to help the boys come through? And really affecting my mental state, just trying to rattle my brain what I can do better. And I think that kind of came out in the Adelaide game where I kicked out at Ben Halloran because I've never done that ever in my career and I don't condone anything like that. And I think that was just the build-up of possible pressure. Being the leader, I've got to try and do something to help lift the boys and things like that. So it was definitely getting a hold of me. But, just trying to get the boys to turn their heads around and still remain confident. It's so hard in such a – when everyone's down and look into the negative points. And, you know, I'm a big believer on energy and I think negative energy is only going to have a negative outcome. So you've got to try and get away from the bad results right now, try and have a positive mindset. And I think, you know, try and enjoy football because you can lose that enjoyment, I think, when things are not going great. You know, there's always criticism outside, you know, fans are not happy and things like that. So you've got to try and get away from that, get back to enjoying football and, you know, when you're happy and enjoying things, that's when things start to lift. And right now, it's not been that. It's been just a negative ball of energy. And I think it just keeps having that negative outcome. So hopefully we can get out of that.
There was a big story that appeared in the Sydney Morning Herald a few weeks ago. I don't know if that unsettled the squad in any way. It seemed from the outside to almost galvanise you in some ways. But I just wanted to move on and ask you, Marcus came out with a quote, I think it was after the game on Sunday, and he said that too many of the players lack match fitness. I don't know whether he was misquoted. Is that a fair statement?
No.
Seems a strange one to me.
Yeah, it's one of the things I probably disagree with. Hmm. I think it's nowhere near anything about fitness. I think it's, you know, we have some big training weeks and we do big numbers in the week. So I don't know if that's even anything to do with it. Have had a bit of a chat to the fitness trainer as well, and we're just trying to come up with the best formula during the week now to make sure we're fit and ready, and we've got as much energy as we can to do the performance for the 90 minutes out there on the pitch. And I don't think it's anything to do with fitness. No.
As we sit here speaking, Mitch, Jean-Paul de Marigny is live on Fox Sports News. He's the interim manager with Labanot Haliti helping him out. Your thoughts on JP taking over for possibly the rest of the season?
Yeah, he's good. You know, and he's been behind Babel this whole way. And I thought they've been a great combination, and they've been good friends as well, as you could see during the training pitches and things like that. So he had a bit of a chat with us again before we started our recovery this morning, and made his point clear of what he expects from us now and how we move forward. And, you know, you said obviously, you know, there's been a lot going on, refresh, we've got tomorrow off. And then when it gets down to Wednesday, business starts and it's time to really put our foot forward and focus and turn this season around.
You've got a bye coming up, so you've got a 14-day break, which is probably a good thing, chance for a bit of a reboot. You've got Simon Cox coming in from Southend. I think he's arrived already. I know you'd probably quite like to play up at the point of attack, but maybe that'll be his role. The guy whose place he's taken, Alexander Meyer, came with such a big reputation. Obviously, he's now left the club very early on in his Wanderers career. Why did that not quite work out? I know there's a few theories around it.
Yeah, I think there is a few things about it. I saw a thing about Adam Peacock as well posting on Twitter last night about Alex Meyer, and that was part of it. I think he kind of realised that he wasn't quite up to that pace anymore, and he was starting to kind of lose it. Not, I wouldn't say lose love for the game, but just kind of realising he wasn't quite up to it and not having that hunger to try and push himself to get to that, to get back up there, which was tough. But also I feel a little bit sorry for him in a way, because I think we could have helped him out a lot more with the way we play with the ball, because I feel like in a lot of teams, strikers are only as good as the team behind them. And I don't think we played to his strengths to kind of set up those chances for him to put away as well. You know, I think even if you look to our game last night, we don't create enough clear-cut chances. I know our shot tally was bigger than Perth's and things like that, but a lot of them are kind of half chances outside the box, and you're kind of just hoping for the best chances and things like that, where you see some goals that are created by Sydney FC, Melbourne City, and Perth Glory as well in other games. They create a lot of good goal-scoring chances that strikers really thrive off, and I feel like we didn't really give that enough to Alex Meyer. So I'm hoping that, you know, we can really work on that as well now that we've got Simon Cox in as well. He can bring a different dynamic. He looks like a strong boy. He brings experience, which is also good, and, you know, goal-scoring record as well, which is good. So hopefully he brings all that with him. And most importantly, that hunger to want to succeed.
Mitch, I'm sure everyone listening now would be full of praise for the way you fronted up and spoken about your club and been honest about everything that's gone on. So we'll give you a little break in terms of the hot seat questions. I'm sure we'll get back to them in a moment. But mate,
all good.
Yeah, all credit to you as skipper for speaking the, you know, in the manner in which you have about a very tough situation for you personally and everyone at the club right now. So let's just change tack for a moment. Simon, what caught your eye from the weekend?
What caught my eye was Sam Kerr, who's got a first goal in the FA Women's Super League in England. She scored it for Chelsea against Arsenal. Pep Montemuro's Arsenal, if you don't mind. So that's great to see her get off the mark. There was another wonderful goal in that game as well. And that, the crowds of the women are getting over there. They're absolutely sensational at the moment. So I think she's enjoying life in London, even though I think she thinks the weather is a bit cold. So well done, Sam.
Well done to her. What caught my eye? Jared Gillett, Australian referee, sending off Mas Luongo, Socceroo, in the championship, which was very controversial because it looked like Mas left his foot in just a little bit, but not sure it was definitely a straight red card. And There was no allegiances from Jared to Massimo. It was straight red card.
Nor should there be, Daniel.
Nor should there be, of course. But Sheffield Wednesday were thumped 4-0. They're in the hunt for a playoff spot, Sheffield Wednesday, and that hurt them enormously. But Mass and everyone at Wednesday were not happy with the decision. They said they're going to appeal it, and we'll see what happens in that regard. But that was rather interesting. Jared Gillett's had a bit of a tumultuous start to his refereeing career over there, and that was another little chapter in the early days. Mitch, apart from everything that's gone on at Western Sydney, anything else that caught your eye away from that over the weekend?
I think it was good for me personally to see Trent Sainsbury get on this goal, on the score sheet for his first goal for the club, which is nice to see. I know he had such a tough time in the last few years, you know, bouncing around, you know, not playing too much with PSV and things like that. So I'm happy to see him playing regular minutes and now get on the score sheet. I think that's just great for him personally and for the Socceroos as well, for confidence and everything like that as well.
Well said. Nikita Rukavica scored in that game as well. He's on a fantastic goal-scoring run, but challenging for the title. I think he should be right in the mix for the Socceroos squad. He offers something different. I know you're one of those players trying to break in as well, Mitch, but his pace, Nikita, gives a different element to the Socceroos attack potentially. And, you know, the Israeli league might not be the biggest league in the world. It's probably on par with the A-League, so to speak, but his pace is a different quality for a Graham Arnold to look
he's
at.
He's always had that. He's always had that. And he's become a bit of a forgotten man, I guess, in terms of the Socceroos. I know Mitch was forgotten as well. We'll probably come onto that later. But it's good to see that, you know, the Australians playing overseas and doing well and probably putting themselves at the forefront of Graham Arnold's mind.
Let's speak about the Olleroos. Speaking of Australians overseas doing well, because what a result that was in the quarterfinal, beating Syria. So two bites at the cherry now. It still won't be easy. It's South Korea in the semi-final on Wednesday night, but they get a couple cracks at it. And you can see the belief is growing. For me, the most pleasing thing against Syria is that those silly mistakes from the first couple games of the tournament seem to have been eradicated. If they can keep that up, they can potentially knock off Korea or win that third, fourth playoff and end this Olympic drought.
Well, look, so, I mean, sometimes you grow into a tournament and, you know, I call the first two Olleroo games, sorry, not the first two, the second and the third games in the group stage. And to be honest, for large parts of the game, they were pretty ordinary. You know, the passing was ordinary. They looked at times even, I dare to say, a little bit naive. I mean, Thailand in that first 45 minutes, really a better team with better finishing. You know, Australia would have been three or four down quite easily. But they hung in there and they managed to grind out results. They weren't great against Bahrain either. Sometimes you grow into a tournament. So it's great that they've got this opportunity. South Korea, they face in the semis. Of course, they played in qualifying and drew with them 1-1. So, you know, they've had a look at them already. And it'd be terrific if they could get to the Olympics because it's been too long, really, 12 years.
Caught much of it, Mitch?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we've got two of the boys there at the moment, which is good to see them playing regular football.
Keanu's playing well.
Yeah, they are doing well. You know, and there's a few other boys that are quite impressive. I think that Piscopo is having a really good tournament personally for himself, and which is great to see. But yeah, like you said, I think they are growing into the tournament. But again, they face probably their toughest test to date now with the Korea coming up. They're not going to be an easy beat at all.
Exactly right. Yeah, Tas Mordekoudis as well, who I thought had a very good game against Syria. You can see, you know, early on in the tournament, they weren't quite sure at the back about their combinations and where they should be. And you can just see them growing now. Thomas Deng going out to right back, I think, has probably been a good move. And they seem like they're starting to gel at the back. Thomas Glover's having an influence. And the depth in the squad is important. I mean, the winning goal against Syria comes from two players who came off the bench. Aidan O'Neill, fantastic ball for Alassane Toure, who then finishes with aplomb. So it's actually a pretty deep squad as well, with the likes of Riley McGree, Harry Suter, Dennis Genre to come back from injury, John Iredale, who I think will be in the mix as well, and then three overage players if they can make the Olympics. There's a lot of depth there.
Well, I mean, the other good thing about this competition is that for the likes of Tas Mordekoudis, who hasn't played an awful lot of football for the Wanderers at senior level, you know, he's getting that game time, and our younger players need that. And there are others who are not, you know, featuring as starters week in, week out in either the local competition or for their clubs overseas. So, you know, sometimes that's why it does take you a while, doesn't it? I guess as a footballer, if you're not playing regular football and all of a sudden you're in this high pressure environment, you know, you're going to struggle a little bit with your touch and, you know, on a bumpy pitch and in hot and humid conditions. So that's not to excuse the way they played in the first three games, which, as I say, I thought was pretty ordinary. But anyway, they're still in there, and that's great. Let's hope they get to Tokyo.
If they can do it, a massive boon for Graham Arnold. I think that would, you know, some of the doubters, it would put some of them to sleep for a little while, because it would be a huge achievement if he can get this team to the Olympics. So
of course,
all the best to them. All live on Fox Sports, of course. The game on Wednesday night, early hours of Thursday morning, and then the third, fourth playoff if it needs to go to that, or the final, which would be obviously a big moment in Australian football. Mitch, we've spoken about the Wanderers enough, of course, but Perth have won six in a row. Club record for them. Incredible the way they've turned it around. What did you make of them yesterday?
Yeah, mate, they've got an unbelievable team, to be honest. They got solid defence. You can see that with their numbers in the last six games. Something crazy like 17 or 18 goals and only two conceded. You know, and it was only a matter of time before they started clicking. I know they started probably not great at the beginning of the A-League, but, you know, you can see they're all starting to get used to each other and they're really starting to click. And, you know, got their maestro, Castro, Fornaroli, deadly finisher. And, you know, you got the other boys, you know, Chianese's hit great form as well and things like that as well. So it's... We knew we had a tough battle on our hands coming up against them, and I thought we did all right. But again, just couldn't punish them when we had that dominance in the second half.
We know that Tony Popovich's sides are so well drilled defensively. Can you give us some insight into that as an actual attacker coming up against them on the pitch? What is it about them that makes them so tough to break down?
They're so compact in their structure, and they're so disciplined. You know, If you're not bopping the ball around well enough, and you know, which we definitely didn't do in the first half, you know, and they force you to make mistakes because you're forcing that ball, you know, 50-50 balls. That's how we got punished with our goal, and you know, as an attacker as well, it's quite hard because, you know, they kind of limit you to even making those runs in behind because they stay quite deep defensively most of the time. So it's quite hard to get in behind. So that means you've got to try and move around in the pockets to try and create your own space and get the other defenders moving so you can create space for another player and things like that. But they're just so disciplined, and they're very hard to break down, which is what I found. It was the first time I played back up front with Kwame. Me and him played up front this game, and thought we found it a bit hard to try and, you know, they take away probably one of our strengths, which is getting in behind. Mm. You know, we struggled to break them down, and they're big boys. When you're knocking in those crosses, there's a couple of chances I thought, if they didn't get a touch on it, I'm there to head it in. You know, Woolrich got one in the second half where we actually scored off it, even though it was a handball. Mm. If Woolrich didn't touch the ball, I'm there heading it in into the goal. But they're such big boys, and they're so aggressive as well. So they're hard to get past. So I think that's just one of our things that we found yesterday was hard to break down.
Here's my early prediction. I'm going off very early. I think we're going to have a repeat of last year's grand final, Perth and Sydney. Just write that one down. I think the only team that can spoil that is Melbourne City. Sorry, Mitch, I know that the Wanderers still got ambitions, but I think the only team that can spoil that are Melbourne City. But I'm just not sure. You look at Melbourne City, I know we'll talk about them in a minute, and sometimes in the big games they don't necessarily show up. They can do it, but I think Perth are the biggest challenges to Sydney. I think the only difference in May will be that the actual hosting will be in Sydney rather than in Perth.
But fair point.
You marked that one down.
I was actually jotting down, because I messaged this to you yesterday, my A-League team of the season at the halfway point.
Right.
So make sure you got yours down as well. And we finish the round, we'll go through it. If not, right, I can give you mine, and... just while we're going through these other games, Simon, get yours together.
Sure.
But we need your input on this as well, because the Melbourne Victory also made a massive call during the week, sacking Marco Kurz. Yeah. Wow, it's been a crazy couple of weeks in the A-League. Merrick Kurz and now Marcus Babbel. I mean, the call was a bit of a surprise in a sense, only 13 games in, but they just never seemed comfortable with him, did they? It seems as if the board wasn't sure about it. They dithered on the decision, and they were almost looking for an out. And that loss to the Mariners was an unlucky one.
Yeah.
Kurz gets sent off, and it seems as if they thought, this is our chance. We can make the call now. And whether it's the right call or not, that's not the point. I think if you're a Victory fan, you're furious at the board for the way in which they've handled it, never mind the fact that Kurz hasn't got the team in a great position in the early part of the season.
Yeah, well, I think there were a couple of major factors at play here. And to be fair to Victory, and the one thing I'll give them credit for, they recognise that they're a big club. They've always acknowledged that, and they don't hide. And when a big call has to be made, they make it. And it was a big call. I thought it was marginal that it was a little bit too early because he could have still turned it around. You can always turn it around with the top six final system, let's be honest. But I think there were two main factors. First of all, the way that Victory played. Now, if I can make an analogy here, and I think this might still play out long-term at Tottenham with Jose Mourinho. Mourinho is a fantastic coach or manager, has been for years, won loads of trophies. But I don't think the style of football that he plays suits Tottenham. He's all right at the moment. Results are okay. But I think long-term, we saw the same thing happen at Manchester United. It's not the sort of football they want to watch. Now, Marco is a good coach. He did really well at Adelaide with limited resources. But I don't think it's the sort of style that Melbourne Victory want as a big club. They want to be dominated. They want to be entertaining and exciting. And they weren't. That's the first biggest factor. The second one is, and a couple of pieces have been written about this of late, if you get your imports right,
yeah,
talked about it with the Wanderers, you've got a great chance in this league. Look at how well Sydney do with their imports. Melbourne Victory got them wrong this year, I'm afraid. Simple as that. Dobrus already seemingly on the way out. Basher, okay, serviceable, you know, not bad. Paulson, yeah.
Done nothing.
Ola Toivonen is the only one that they've got, and he was signed by Kevin Muscat.
Yeah.
So if you get those wrong, you're in trouble. And unfortunately, you know, he has to wear some of the blame for that. Yeah. Maybe not all, but some.
The style of football, did you notice anything different on the weekend under Salvatore? Seemed to be a little bit more of a passing game.
Yeah, second half. I mean, first half they were a bit disjointed, and maybe that's a reaction to what happened during the week. But I thought second half they were okay, and you know, with better finishing. I mean, Andrew Naboot didn't have a great night. I know he left the field in tears. He's a very passionate young man.
Yeah.
And he'll be disappointed with some of his finishing. He wasn't the only one to blame. Elvis Kamsoba had a really good second half. He can't buy a goal for love nor money at the moment. And without Toivonen as well, you know, that leaves you with a bit of a problem. Where are the goals going to come from? So I think there's a bit to work to work with for Carlos Salvatore. I don't know whether he's the long-term solution. At the moment, they probably want a bit of stability. He knows the club. He was number two to Muscat, number two to Kurtz. So it's probably a good solution. And then at the end of the season, they'll look to reboot perhaps. But yeah, overall, some signs of encouragement. But now they've got Sydney to come at home on Friday.
Wow. It's just a weird position for this club to be in. Massive club. They've got rid of their manager. Okay, they feel it's the right decision. But you've got an interim manager who no one had ever heard of before he was appointed, Salvatore. Mm. When you're trying to make it into the finals and you've locked him in for the rest of the season, it's an odd predicament for a club of that stature to be in for the rest of the campaign. Similar to the Wanderers in a sense, but I think yours was the decision at the Wanderers people could see coming. At the Victory, it was a shock. So they've put themselves in this predicament, and it's an odd one. What have you made of Adelaide and the Victory, Mitch? Because that was a big win for the Reds just to get back on track and keep themselves in that mix for, around that top four.
Yeah, definitely. I think Adelaide and Victory, I think... The stocks of players they have, you know, they should be right up there, especially with McGree being back now, the last couple of weeks from injury and things like that. I love watching him.
He's such
a good player.
Yeah.
And then Halloran also, he's starting to bang in a few goals now, which is good. But then again, yeah, like I feel like they can be definitely in better positions than what they are, and probably playing even a bit better football than what they are. But I think it's going to be an interesting second half of the season to see who's going to be hitting their straps. And Adelaide and Victory have every bit of potential to do that.
Brisbane Roar, I mean, they've given you the blueprint as to how quickly things can turn. They were sitting second or third bottom recently, but all of a sudden, four games without defeat, two wins, two draws. Good win on the weekend against a very good Wellington side who were better in the first 45, but Brisbane just stuck with them and then I think took charge in the second and got their reward. A big win for Robbie Fowler, and yeah, they've turned the corner under the former Liverpool man.
Yeah, they have a little bit. I still don't think they're, you know, exactly playing free-flowing fluid football, but, you know, they're starting to get results, which will build confidence. I really like Dylan Wenzel-Hall. So, I mean, he scored a fantastic goal. I don't know why he's not been given more of an opportunity, really, and maybe he will do now. I mean, he's tried Amadi Holloway up top. He's tried Roy O'Donovan, who seems to be, I think, was he on the outer at the weekend? I don't even know if he was on the bench. But I think Wenzel-Hall's is, the type of striker that I enjoy watching. He's all right. He's not necessarily the leader of a line, but he's quick. He's direct. He likes to take players on. He's not frightened to shoot. And he's pretty good at it too. So he was probably their one big success story last season when they had that horrible campaign. So I'd like to see him get a bit of a run. But you're right. I mean, Wellington were unlucky. They hit the woodwork two or three times. I did love Uffy Tele's quote at the end. God was on God's side. Fantastic. He's learning well.
Yeah.
So Wellington will be back. Not concerned about them. But good to see Brisbane. And they've changed the squad around a bit. Corey Brown's come back. Scott McDonald will lend a bit of experience. So, yeah, looks a lot more positive for Brisbane.
Hopefully it keeps on picking up for them. Central Coast beat the victory last week and then were thumped in the first half by Western United. And that was the game, basically. Western United, they seem to have the capability, Mitch, to turn it on in the space of 5-10 minutes in a game of football and just take the game away from you very quickly. They've got that in them, don't they, which they showed yesterday.
So much quality. And Diamante had a great first half as well. He's an absolutely unreal player to watch.
He's just fantastic.
He's ridiculous. And I love him. And I haven't really hung out with the guy too much, but he even his aura, you just can't help but love. You could tell he's such a good captain and he's such a good leader on the pitch, and his quality shines through as well. And then you've got a ruthless striker like Berisha who's still got it, which is an awesome formula to have.
You know who I love watching is Max Burgess. I think he's the Aussie Jack Grealish. And Jack Grealish, is a throwback to someone like a Glenn Hoddle who, plays with the socks down as if he's not wearing shin pads, the long sleeves, the floppy hair, almost as if he's not playing in a position. He's just running around with his mates. Yeah. He's got that in him, doesn't he? Just like a real football stylist, and he creates.
He looks almost languid on the pitch.
Yeah.
He looks as though he's almost a bit slow, but he's got such good footwork. His left peg is sensational.
Yeah.
And he must be learning off the likes of Diamante and Coney. I mean, what a couple of players to be able to learn from. I thought he was really good against the Mariners. The strange thing about the game, we've seen this a lot with Western United. They're 3-0 up at halftime. They're out of sight. I mean, the Mariners defending, let's be honest, was atrocious.
Yeah.
But the Mariners dominated almost the entire game. I mean, for a good half an hour in the second half, I don't think Western United got out of their own half. But they were so comfortable in protecting Philip Curto. There was never really a problem. Obviously, by contrast, that's a big problem for the Mariners. Totally toothless up front.
20 minutes in, you're like, get Matt Simon on. They need the injection of muscle
why
and energy right now.
Well, why not start him?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing
you
as
know,
well, isn't it?
Pretty like, well.
But yeah, exactly.
Is he capable of getting... He can do the 90 minutes.
Of course he can. He's one of those players that just don't give up. He always give 100% on the pitch and, sometimes you need that. And you could see that change that he gave to the team really against Victory.
Did you... When you watched that game, knowing Matty and being an ex-teammate, were you laughing?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you thought... I mean, sorry, Victory fans, I know it wasn't funny for you, but... watching as a neutral, you just knew when he came off the bench what he was going to bring.
Mate,
and he did. He unsettled them.
That's what it is funny because I actually know the guy personally.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's a funny attribute to have in a game because it's not the most common thing now. You want those, fluid footballers and great technically and things like that. But that other dynamic he brings to the team can really help get a result every now and then. And sometimes you need it. And I was even told that against when I came against Jordan away with the Socceroos just recently in the World Cup qualifier. I was actually told to do a similar thing because
go out and do a Matt Simon.
kind of like that. They'll tough and they'll win a lot of battles during the game. Coming up against the likes of Taggart, who's very different to that. He pretty much said to bring on that kind of physicality and just battle them. And, they can help in games. And Matty Simon is the pinnacle of that. And, it helps you lift because if you're having a bad game yourself and it's a struggle and, you feel like, nothing's going your way or you can't get out of it. And then you see a bloke like that who's just given everything, fighting for you. And you'd be like, there's no excuses for me not to be doing that. And
gives you
lift. It does. It really does. And that's what I credit to him a lot. And he did it a lot at Sydney FC. He might not have played a massive part. Mm. In the goals or anything like that, but at certain moments, Sydney FC were maybe not controlling the game completely. You bring him on and he brings that different dynamic. It can really help the other boys shine.
I wonder if away from home they start him just for an hour, go hell for leather so they can create that energy away from home. At home, maybe the crowd helps them a bit and you bring him on near the end. Maybe that's something for Alan Stadjic to look at.
Mate, defenders would be they're not happy coming up against players like that. I can, and that's the thing. If you can do that, and he battles away for 60 minutes, you know, they might be bloody tired from wrestling him and battling with him and doing all that.
Yeah.
You know, and then you bring on someone that can maybe also bring a bit more.
Well, you know, to get back to the Western United Mariners game, the similar sort of player who does score goals is Bessel Berisha. You know, he gets in people's faces. He irritates defenders. And he was terrific again. Two goals, which now takes him up to joint six on the all-time National League goal scorers list, along with Franny Awaratifi. And that first goal was beautiful.
Yeah.
Diamante's ball in... If you could study that and put it in a textbook for kids, I mean, God, that was an amazing ball in. And Berisha still had an awful lot to do.
Yeah.
Absolute textbook. Brilliant.
Just on Diamante, there was a funny quote after the game from Mark Rudin because he's got this ankle injury. He might be out for a couple of weeks. And Rudin said in his press conference, oh, yeah, he said to me he copped it a few years ago playing for Atalanta against AC Milan. He said he loves dropping in these big names that he played against. He's a very cool guy, Diamante. I don't know if you follow him on Instagram or anything, but, you know, his musical sort of drive-alongs that he posts on Instagram are great content. So he's been a wonderful asset for the A-League. Look, there wasn't much to write home about from the Melbourne City win over Newcastle Jets. It was pretty much an expected afternoon out for Melbourne City, but a good win for them. I guess the most interesting story from the game was Carl Robinson sitting next to Laurie McKenna. It looks as if he's got the job as the next Jets coach.
Looks that way. I also saw him in Geelong. He was there to watch the Western United Central Coast Mariners game. Had a wee chat with him pre-game. He wasn't giving anything away. I said, so, you're here on holiday? And he said, oh, you know, just having a look around. And Laurie wasn't giving anything away. But, I mean, let's be honest, yeah. Looks like he's got the job. He's got experience of 5 years with the Vancouver Whitecaps, where I think he signed Bernie Abini, so he probably knows a bit about the Australian game as well. I remember him as a player. He was a good player, combative midfielder for Wolves and Portsmouth. I think I interviewed him many years ago. So, you know, if he's the man, then wish him all the best. I mean, he's not got an awful lot with respect to work with. You know, if they can get Wes Houlihan fit. Arroyo was good second half, but again, similar story to the Mariners against Western United, I thought. Dominated the play, but didn't really land any big punches. Not many, anyway, on Dean Bazanas' goal. And City, I think they had another gear. There's a bit of controversy about the award of the penalty. Which again we've talked about already. Craig Noon, I thought was good. You know, back to back A-League goals for him for the first time. Jamie McLaren on target. Well, you know, Dayans and Hawaii, who normally scores. So yeah, pretty routine for City. The only thing I'd say about City, I'd like in after that you know first half performance where they were so good, you'd like to see them really put a team to the sword because they're certainly capable of doing it. Mm. But they played sort of within themselves. I thought a bit in the second half.
Yeah, they've definitely got the quality to do that. And their attacking prowess that they've got as well is just something that we could do with as probably a bit more as well. But yeah, I think there's going to be a chance that they'll probably do that this year. And I'm just waiting the game to see it. Hopefully, it's not against us.
Susayeta as well.
Yes, good signing.
The Spanish. I mean, you look at his CV. Excellent. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, there's already comparisons with Diego Castro, which is probably premature. But you could tell around the stadium as well. It wasn't the largest crowd, but there was a real buzz when he came on. That's what Melbourne City should be about,
yeah, exactly.
With their imports, you know, really exciting the supporters.
Spot on. Right, let's do our A-League teams of the season at pretty much the halfway point. We'll be 15 weeks in. There's 29, so with the bye, it's hard to be exact, but we're basically at the halfway point of the season. Do you want to go first, Simon, or do you want me to go first?
No, you go first.
You want me to go first, right. Mitch, apologies, mate.
Can I just say congratulations to Kate Jakovits as well,
first
female A-League referee.
That was a great story from that game. Yep. Sorry, Mitch, you're on the bench. Apologies. You started the season well, but maybe a couple others have just squeezed you out from my team. So I'll apologise before I get through my 11. I do start with a Western Sydney Wanderer. Daniel Opar in goal. I think he's had a really good season. I think he's been a good find for you guys. So I think the keepers are pretty even this season. Marinovic has probably got claims for that. Andrew Redmayne as well. But I've gone with Opar in goals. Back four for the moment. Ryan Grant at right back. Harrison Delbridge, who I think has had a good season. Stephen Taylor, I think has had a really good campaign as well. And I've gone Liberato Cicace at left back. I think he gets in. Three in midfields. There's not really a holder, but I've gone with Diamante, Riley McGree, who I think has to be in, and De Villa from Wellington, who I think has been fantastic. And then three up front, Costa Barbarousis, who's up there for goals and assists. I think he's been an important player for Sydney. Adam Lafondra, of course, and Jamie McLaren.
Wow. Well, our teams are very, very similar. Right. So I've gone Daniel Lopar in goal as well. Back four, Ryan Grant, Harrison Delbridge, Kakache at left back. My only change is Ryan McGowan.
Okay. Instead of Stephen Taylor.
And to be honest, I could have put Alex Wilkinson in there quite easily as well. But, you know, those two have been terrific for Sydney. My only other change, I've gone 4-4-2 Diamond.
Okay.
You know, because I'm trendy continental coach. Luis Dorigo as the holder. Wow. I think he's been tremendous for an 18-year-old.
I haven't got a true holder, so fair play.
And then either side of the diamond, Diamante, of course, the diamond. Riley McGree and De Villa as the number 10. And two up top, Jamie McLaren and Adam Lafondra.
Okay, so you've gone Dorigo instead of Costa Barbarousis. Yeah. Otherwise, they're pretty similar. And you've gone McGowan instead of Stephen Taylor.
Correct.
Well, we think alike, considering you put it all together on the spot, Simon. There was obviously no collusion on that. Mitch, let's talk about your career because it's been a storied one and one that I think a lot of fans have taken a lot of joy in. Talk us through where it all began for you, how it all began, where football sits in the life of Mitch Duke.
Yeah, well, as a lot of people know now that, like, obviously I've grown up in Western Sydney.
You're a proper Westie.
Proper Westie, yeah. So it's nice to be back home playing, representing the club where I'm from. It's on my doorstep. So, started out, well, obviously my first club was Liverpool Rangers as a young one coming through the grassroots and things like that. But then started out properly with probably Parramatta Eagles, then Blacktown City, before I joined Mariners youth team and then got promoted from there to the Mariners first team. So, it's been a good thing coming up. And then I was lucky enough to get rewarded coming through the NYL with the Mariners. And I think I got golden boot in the youth league there and got my chance and scored on debut with the Mariners as well, which was nice. And then, haven't looked back since.
Mitch, are you one of nine?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes,
wow.
I'm one of nine kids, yeah.
Goodness me.
It's been absolute chaos growing up. Six sisters as well, which hasn't been fun.
Oh,
can you do the Good Will Hunting thing where he lists all his brothers and sisters' names?
Yeah.
Go on, reel them off.
All right, so starting from the top, it's Karen, Amanda, Melissa, Nicole, Andrew, Kimberly, Sharon, me, and Brendan. There we go. And I think I got the order wrong, though.
In between having children, which clearly wasn't an awful lot of time, your parents, are they football people or are you the outlier? Your brothers and sisters, are they football people?
Yeah, they put everyone into sport. I think we had all played soccer at one point, cricket, netball, all those bits and pieces. I'm definitely, me and my younger brother were the only ones that kind of stuck to football. And then I was the only one that kind of, like, went on with it. I definitely wouldn't say they were football heads, though. If anything, my dad was more of a cricketer and enjoyed that kind of game. So,
well, of course, with a surname like Duke.
How could you not? Yeah, so, and credit to them because handling nine kids obviously wouldn't be easy. My mum had to be in about eight different places at once. So for them to give their time to me to still have that football dream and trying to make it, they sacrificed a lot of their time and money to help me through, and obviously they didn't have the greatest of funds with it going to nine kids.
So how many nieces and nephews do you have at the moment?
Yeah, so there's,
see if you can name all these.
No, I think there's 13 nieces and nephews as well. So
wow,
yeah, there's Christmas time and birthdays are a bit chaotic, but it's awesome, and we're such a tight knit family, which is we're very lucky to have.
I know your parents must mean a lot to you because I remember when you signed for the Wanderers, you did that video on social media, which was fantastic, where you basically surprised them and you rocked up to the house and said, I'm back here in Sydney.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously just mean the world to you then.
Well, that's it. And the hardest thing being away 4 years in Japan was, my parents aren't getting any younger. It's been hard getting away. I know every year I was away in Japan because my dad can't really fly long distances anymore. So it was hard not having them being able to visit as much as I'd like. And, you know, you don't see them all the time. My wife's from England as well. So I was breaking up my holiday time. You know, my next break I'll go to England, next break I'll go to Australia. So I wasn't seeing them for long parts of, even a couple of years almost. So it was very hard. And to see them age was even harder. And then again, you know, every year I was in Japan, they'd be like, oh, just come back to the A-League. You know, like, we miss watching you play and, you know, things like that. And when the opportunity came, I had chances to stay in Asia after Japan. in Japan, Korea, other parts of Asia, and even a few options in Europe. But the deciding factor, it didn't come down to money or the league or anything like that. It came down to family reasons. I did really just want to come back home. And when Wanderers' offer came, it was kind of no other decision was going to be made, and had to jump on it to be back home.
Talking of England, well, we'll come on to your time with the Mariners and what happened after that in a moment. But I know you had a trial with West Ham back in 2013, but you're an Arsenal fan, aren't you?
Yeah.
How did that sit with you, and how did the trial go? Who were you sort of playing alongside, if anyone?
Well, when I was at West Ham, West Ham trials, well, Andy Carroll was there. Right. They had just signed... what was his name? Stuart Downing.
Yeah.
You know, and players like that. There was also Joe Cole that was still there, you know, and then Noble, who's still there. That Winston Reid Noble, was there.
Yeah.
I think Kurt Zuma was there. No. Yeah, but there was quite a few big name players that were there, and very impressive to see on the training pitch and to train with. Standing next to Andy Carroll wasn't great for my confidence because he's an absolute beast. But yeah, that was an awesome experience, and you know, to see those boys out there on the pitch and be involved, and to feel, I took a bit of confidence out of that because I felt like I wasn't too out of place there either, which was quite nice. But it was a bit of a funny decision going there because I could never pretty much play over there for visa reasons anyway. So I had to be a bit more of a regular national team player to have a chance to play over there. So it was very much for the experience and less of a trial, I guess, in that sense. But I look back in that and still be pretty happy with being involved with a Premier League club like that and taking away, you know, that experience and seeing the level where, you know, you need to be and what you need to do to get there.
I'm sure. But your major time overseas came at Shimizu in Japan. What was that like? Because it seems as if you grew to another level as a player, but perhaps we didn't take as much notice in Australia for whatever reason. But you just blossomed over there, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think I definitely wasn't nowhere near as the player I am now, I guess, in the sense when I was in the A-League. And I definitely became the better player while I was in Japan. I had to learn a lot and I had to adjust quickly because they shocked me when I first arrived. I felt like in the first 4 to 6 weeks I joined them, I was chasing shadows. And I really had to adjust with my touch because I think I got away with it a little bit when I started out in the A-League. I was quite raw. I had the pace to burn, but I would say technically I wasn't great. My touch on the ball was nowhere near as tight as it should have been and things like that. So those sides of my game, I definitely grew in Japan, which was awesome. And I'm so thankful for, because if I was to say Japan's probably the most technical league in Asia, and it's amazing to play there, and you enjoy it so much because you also see the young boys coming through in Japan, 17-year-olds. You just whip the ball into them and they're Cruyff turning it on their first touch and things like that, where you kind of just don't see that here. So it was a good insight, good experience, Japan, and I've grown a lot since I've been over there, and not just that, mentally as well. You know, it's not easy. But then as well, there's relegation, promotion and things like that, which also adds another aspect into football that you don't know about in the A-League.
Did you learn the language?
I did a little bit.
Yeah.
But I honestly...
Come on, give us a burst.
I honestly... No, Genki desu, there he goes. Like, hey, how are you? But I honestly didn't go there with a lot of confidence. I'd seen previously a few Aussies go there and not last too long. And I didn't, and players who I thought were better than me. So I didn't actually back myself. I was like, okay, I've signed a 2-year deal, but I could be gone in 6 months because that's what I'd seen happen to Michael McGlinchey, Mitch Nichols, Vukovic, Nathan Burns, even, you know, and players like that who I thought were better than me on all levels didn't last that long. So I was like, oh God, I could be gone in 6 months. So I didn't really commit to learning the language too much. And definitely didn't think I'd be there 4 years later.
But given that you did stay there for so long and played at such a good level for a good club, was it irritating for you that you made your international debut 2013 under Holger Osik at the East Asian Cup, but you were pretty much ignored throughout that whole period in Japan? That must have been a bit frustrating for you.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, obviously, that was the whole era of Ange Postecoglou, and I don't think he had maybe known too much about me, and he maybe had his own players in his own mind, which was fair enough. But I did get a bit frustrated here and there where I thought, I swear at a time, I was one of the few players that was playing regular football, week in, week out, 90-minute football in a good league. you know, more so than a lot of players that were getting selected at the time. And then, you know, you'd hear him say certain things about, you know, players will only get selected that are playing minutes and in good form. And I thought I kind of fit the bill there. You know, Japan's not easy, as a lot of players would tell you. And I played over 100 appearances there, which is not easy either. So I thought I would have been a chance at times. I think the only question mark that could have been, I was definitely all over the place with positions. I was wing back in my first season in the J League. Then I was winger. Then I'd bounce between striker and winger here and there in Japan. So I don't know if maybe they've seen he's not complete set in a certain formation. I don't know how he would fit into the squad or things like that. But I thought I would have been at least given a chance to prove myself. But, you know, that's football, unfortunately.
I imagine part of you in that situation just wants to call him and say, Ange, you want guys playing minutes? I'm playing minutes. I've got your agent. So how do you deal with that? Because part of you, I'm sure, just wants to send a message in front of his face and let him know.
If I'm honest, the thing that probably annoyed me the most was the fact that he didn't look at me. And then where he left the Socceroos, where did he go? He went to Japan. I was like, come on. Like, if you rate the league or anything that much to go there to coach, and like, were you not looking at me?
I've got to ask you a story that I heard. It might be apocryphal, but I did hear this. So you played in that infamous 6-0, the double bagel games against France and Brazil. You played against Brazil over in Brasilia, I think it was.
Yeah.
And at the end of the game, somebody told me, I just wanted you to confirm this is right or wrong. I think it was one of your very early games. Might have even been your... not your debut, but anyway. Yeah. So you played in this game, you came off the bench, and at the end of the game, you went over and got one of the Brazilian shirts. It was a big-name player, and you got the shirt, and you didn't know who he was. You went,
I didn't know who he was.
He was playing for Chelsea. It was Ramirez.
That's right. I literally, because I just saw all the boys obviously go to the ones that I knew, and I was like, there's no way I'm going to try and step on anyone's toes. So I just went to the guy that wasn't getting asked, so...
Hey, mate.
Lucky I didn't call him the wrong name, but... yeah, after I brag about it now, acting like I did know who he was. But I'm glad I kind of avoided that. And thanks for bringing that up to embarrass me.
Did he take your shirt?
Yes, he did, actually. Probably using it as toilet paper, but
oh, well. I doubt it. Do you feel as if you're back in the mix now? I know that it's very tough to get into the Socceroos squad. There's, you know, Taggart and McLaren's form in the past 12 months has been fantastic. But do you feel as though you're in the mix, so to speak?
Yeah, of course. It's a weird thing for me. Like, when I'm in the last couple of times I've been in the national team setup, I've been put up front. But then most of the time here, other than the game.
Is that your preferred position, up front?
Up front, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Central striker.
Yeah, I'd rather be in the mix up front, going central, you know, being closer to the goal. You know, I thought I've done okay out left. You know, I've got 5 goals this season as a left winger, really, which I can be pretty happy about. I definitely would prefer to at least be in double digits by now. And I probably should be. But now, if I can hopefully stay up front, that gives me a better chance to help myself with the goals and also help the club, because that's what we've been lacking in most.
Let's hope you can finish the season off strongly and you can be around the squad for 2020, because there's so much Australian football to be played with the national team. Before we go, let's just touch on matters overseas briefly. Obviously, a massive game in the Premier League, Liverpool beating Manchester United in the early hours of the morning. So it's 16 points, the lead now, with 16 games for Liverpool, one more to go than anyone else. So let's be honest, it's going to happen. It was a weird game this morning.
You can see how his voice changes as well when he starts talking about it.
I'm trying to be professional here and analyse the game. Thank you. It was a weird game this morning. United actually played pretty well. That's not a backhanded compliment, but they set up quite well. They stopped the likes of Alexander-Arnold and Robertson getting forward, and they had patches of the game where they could have easily scored. It feels like it could have been 5-0 Liverpool or 1-0. Sorry, 1-1 quite comfortably. So it was an odd game of football, but the Reds just have the cutting edge at the moment, and United obviously don't.
Well, not just the cutting edge, but they've got that winning mentality. I mean, there's been so many games that they've played this season where they haven't played that well. Let's be brutally honest about it. But they've managed to, you know, jag the points, even, you know, stoppage time goals. Yep. And that's the mentality of a winning club and good players. You know, for all the teasing that goes on between us, Liverpool have got a fantastic side. They're the best side in the world at the moment. That's not easy for me to say, by the way, but it's true. Oh, yeah. And, you know, the likes of City, we're miles behind at the moment. So that's, you know, that's a big credit to Jurgen Klopp. I'm full of admiration for the team and for Klopp, just not the fans. So Jordan, enjoy it.
Jordan Henderson was brilliant this morning. Gini Wijnaldum, big games. He just bosses them. And Van Dijk was just, I mean, he is
a monster.
So good to watch.
Beast.
I've never seen a defender, and he's a generational defender. It's like Cannavaro in the 2000s. It's like a once-in-a-decade type player. So he was brilliant again. We could talk about a lot more overseas, but we are simply out of time. Mitch has
Can I ask one more quick
things
question?
To do? Sure.
Where did the gold celebration come from? The splits.
All the boys pretty much just dared me to do it because they're quite jealous about when we're doing yoga. I'm just pulling out all these flexible moves and
love it.
So yeah, they just said when you score a goal, you got to show the fans you know what you can do, and
that's great.
Very much mixed reviews. Mixed reviews, yeah.
It's a good goal celebration.
I'm just jealous. He can do it.
Yeah, I've been getting told people should make a little petition to put it on FIFA. So I might have to pull it out a bit more if I can start banging in a few more goals.
Second half of the season, hopefully.
There we go. I'll pull it out a few times.
We didn't ask for any Twitter questions because we knew that'd all be about the Wanderers with Mitch coming in. So we pretty much left that to us. And that chat at the beginning was fantastic. Mitch, all the credit, as I said before, to you for coming in on a tough day for the club. Well done for fronting up. And I'm sure the Wanderers fans, as well as Australian football fans, really enjoyed your openness about it. And I think the way in which the club as a whole, Simon, has dealt with this Absolutely. Marcus Babbel departure, especially him speaking on video today, it's been handled with a lot of class. And Absolutely. Mitch has certainly exemplified that today. Thanks to you, mate.
Cheers, Garby.
Thanks to Phil Bryant. Did your Cheers, Packers boys. Win, Phil? He's an unhappy man. His NFL team lost in the, the championship game of the conference. They're gone. So he will bounce back. Thanks to you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another special guest on the Fox Football Podcast.